Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, January 9th, 2018. Happy New Year. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Sexual Harassment Awareness. Hashtag MeToo K-12 shines light on abuse in schools. Races, people would be surprised by number of reports. This article is written by Lindsay Jones and is based out of Champaign-Urbana area. Originally created for women to call attention to the prevalence of sexual harassment and assault, the MeToo hashtag is adding a new dimension, this time as a campaign focused on school-age children. Stop Sexual Assault in Schools, or acronym SSAIS, a Portland-based nonprofit, rebranded the hashtag to MeToo K-12, hoping the new tag that's launched today will encourage victims of sexual harassment and assault by peers or school staff to share their experiences while they attended K-12 schools. Some might find the idea of underage children facing sexual assault or harassment hard to believe, but Adelaide AIME, that's A-I-M-E, with Urbana-based Rape Advocacy Counseling and Education Services, isn't one of them. We definitely get calls from underage folks, and we try to help them the best we can, said AIME, Race's executive director. I think people would be surprised at how often this is happening to young people. To illustrate the need for the hashtag SSAIS, or Stop Sexual Assault in Schools, cites statistics from a 2011 study by the American Association of University Women. In it, 48% of interviewed students in grades 7 through 12 reported experiencing some sort or form of sex-based harassment, be it physical, cyber, or verbal. Despite that, the AAUW also reported that many schools claim to have never received any reports of harassment. Data from the 2013-14 school year in Illinois revealed that nearly 1,500 schools reported zero incidents the entire year. Reported numbers are low for the Champaign-Urbana area as well. When asked for documentation of sexual harassment or assault incidents, Champaign's Unit 4 district reported one incident of sexual assault during the 2016-17 school year. Harassment incidents were not provided in the available documentation. Erin, E-R-I-N, Ludwick, L-U-D-W-I-C-K, assistant principal of discipline and attendance at Urbana High, said the school had two reports coded as harassment, in parentheses, from this school year. The first incident is coded as harassment, she said. If it was a repeated action, it would be coded as bullying, and we have not had any bullying reports this year. A rise in reports. Urbana Middle School Principal Scott Woods said he has seen the number of reports at his school rise, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. Middle school students are still learning how to conduct themselves, and Woods said they have to learn what kinds of actions and words are acceptable. Incident reports can also create opportunities to teach proper behavior, he said. What usually happens is a boy says something inappropriate, or possibly what I call soliciting, Woods said. The exact number of complaints raised by this kind of behavior is unknown due to technical difficulties, Woods said. To help document and resolve complaints, Urbana Middle School issues forms to parents or students and asks them to record the date, names of involved students, location of the alleged incident, and whether the action was based on race, sex, disability, religion, or gender. Earlier this year, the school attempted to make the form available online, but Woods said the website crashed and the records of complaints are mixed between paper and electronic forms. My plan for this year is that it all would be available electronically, but due to technical difficulties, we're still using the paper forms, he said, but the forms have helped make things more transparent. After a complaint is submitted, the administration will decide whether it meets the school board's criteria for bullying, intimidation, or harassment. Then mark it on the form. I tell parents you have a right to see this form, Woods said. If you want to see this form, you can. Although numbers weren't readily available, Woods said putting the form online has led to higher numbers of incidents reported. Thank heaven for hashtag MeToo. Sarah, S-A-R-A, Sanders, S-A-N-D-E-R-S, principal at Champaign's Franklin Middle School, said interpreting what a high number of reports means isn't as straightforward as it might seem. Part of it is empowering students to speak up and get with their support network, Sanders said. That's why the relationships we have in our schools is important. We have to have people who make students feel safe. SSAIS says the problem with sexual harassment in schools doesn't end with incident reporting. According to the nonprofit, one potential danger of students reporting incidents is that the incident may not be resolved fairly or at all. The 1972 implementation of Title IX, which prohibits sex discrimination in schools, requires all schools receiving federal funding to respond to and correct incidents of discrimination or harassment. But not all schools do, according to the SSAIS. To call national attention to the issue, the nonprofit will be officially launching the #MeTooK12 campaign online today, hoping to prompt survivor stories as well as make people aware of their options should a school fail to comply with Title IX. In the meantime, AIDE said one of the most important things a parent or guardian can do is listen to what a child is trying to tell them. Being open to what your teen is saying can be hard, but it's the most important thing, AIDE said. And if a social media campaign seems trite, AIDE said it's important to remember the impact the original MeToo hashtag created. A hashtag is amazing. Think about the conversations that have gone on in the last 6 months that wouldn't have gone on a year ago, she said. Thank heaven for #MeToo. The next headline reads, The Health Reporter. The Right Beat. Retired coach gets groundbreaking mini pacemaker. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Urbana. Offered the chance to become one of the first local patients to get a new miniature device implanted in his heart, retired coach Don Pittman, that's P-I-T-T-M-A-N, told his doctor to go for it. At 91, Pittman wasn't about to be scared of something like that. At this point in my life, whatever will be, he said. Pittman, who lives near Loda, got his Micra pacemaker last month. The Micra, M-I-C-R-A, approved by the Food and Drug Administration in 2016, has the same job as its larger counterpart to steady a stalled or irregular heartbeat. But the Micra is about the size of a large Vitamin, making it 90% smaller than a standard pacemaker. No more skippy heartbeat for Pittman, a retired educator who formerly coached football and wrestling at Danville and Champaign Central High Schools. After he got his pint-sized pacemaker in December, he was up and around the next day without any problems, he said. I feel like it's doing its job very well, he said. Pittman was Dr. Benjamin Ree, that's R-H-E-E, Dr. Benjamin Ree's third Micra patient. A cardiac electrophysiologist at the Carl Heart and Vascular Institute, Ree, that's R-H-E-E again, has now done 8 Micra procedures, and all those patients are doing well, he said. Most people who need a pacemaker will still get the traditional kind, Ree said. The Micra only paces the right ventricle of the heart, and it's intended only for patients who need a single-chamber pacing system. Still, Ree says, I think this is the direction of the future. One difference with the Micra, in addition to it being the subcompact of pacemakers, is that it's a self-contained one-piece device. It doesn't require the lead wires that a standard pacemaker needs to carry the electrical signals between the heart and the generator device. It also doesn't require the surgical pocket under the skin in the left chest, according to Ree. The Micra is delivered through a vein in the leg without an incision in the chest, and it goes directly into the heart's right ventricle. The newest one is actually placed directly in the heart itself, so the sensor is in contact with the heart muscle, Ree said. Doing away with the need for the wires addresses one of the challenges that has been associated with pacemakers, he said. Over time, force on the wires can cause them to break or malfunction, and infections can develop in surrounding tissue. The recovery after a Micra procedure also runs on the mini side. While Pittman said he was back to regular activity quickly, Ree said people getting standard pacemakers have to have restricted arm movements for a few weeks after. The battery in the Micra has an estimated lifespan of 10 to 12 years. Ree said it's anticipated that when the battery wears out, doctors will leave the current Micra in place in the heart and install another one. Chicago's Northwestern Memorial Hospital lays claim to being the first Illinois hospital to make the Micra available in May 2016. There are now some other hospitals in the state that are offering it, along with Carl, and it should be available at Presence Covenant Medical Center sometime after February 1st, according to Presence cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. Abraham Cockerill, that's K-O-C-H-E-R-I-L. More recent MICRA patients may have a financial advantage. Medicare began covering the MICRA last year, and private insurers began following suit, Ree said. Now let's quickly take a look at our weather forecast. This is provided to us by Greg Soulge, that's S-O-U-L-J-E, and his column on the weather front. Today, 37, areas of fog early, partly sunny in the afternoon, southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Overnight, cloudy, patchy fog late, some rain in spots late, south to southeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour, chance of rain 40%. Wednesday, the high will be 45, the low will be 33, patchy fog early, windy, milder, mostly cloudy, rain in spots in the morning and afternoon. Overnight, breezy and mild, a little rain in spots. Thursday, the high is 56, the low is 45, unseasonably mild, cloudy, areas of fog, periods of rain, shifting to wet snow at night, chance of rain is at 70%. Friday, the high will be 31, the low will be 28, it will be much colder, snow possibly becoming heavy, cloudy, chance of snow is at 70%, so that's on Friday. Saturday, the high is 24, the low is 18, breezy and colder, light snow and snow showers, cloudy, chance of snow will be at 60%. The next headline reads, The Crisis Nursery. $100,000 gets nursery off and running. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Urbana. The Crisis Nursery says it's launching the next phase of a fundraising campaign with a $100,000 matching gift donation. The gift commitment has been made by sandwich chain founder Jimmy John Liaud, which is L-I-A-U-T-A-U-D, and his wife Leslie through the Liaud Family Foundation. My apologies if I'm mispronouncing that. The Liaudts will match all money pledged up to $100,000 through June, according to the Crisis Nursery, an emergency child care facility intended to provide safe shelter and support for young children and families in crisis. The agency said it is raising money to knock down a deficit of about $300,000, resulting from an unpaid State Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity grant. The unpaid DCEO grant was awarded to the nursery for an expansion project in 2009. The grant funding has remained frozen indefinitely, according to the Crisis Nursery, but the agency's leaders continue to ask for the promised money to be paid in full. The agency said the need for its services has grown as other local human service agencies have reduced their own services due to funding deficiencies. Its Safe Children program had a record high 5,741 admissions in the past fiscal year and provided more than 45,000 hours of crisis care to children and families in the local community. The nursery's Strong Families program also provided hundreds of home visits and support groups. We are so grateful for the Liaud family's continued support, Nursery Executive Director Stephanie Record, that's R-E-C-O-R-D, said. Crisis Nursery is ready to erase the deficit left by the state of Illinois' failure to pay the promised DCEO grant. This largest donation is the second six-figure gift awarded to the Crisis Nursery from the Liaud Family Foundation, which donated $200,000 last January. That gift, along with a $100,000 donation from Dan and Rhonda Proctor, completed the first phase of a $1.9 million campaign for building expansion. It gives us great joy to help out and give back to our local charities, Jimmy John Liaud said. I hope the matching program inspires others to help as it has us. The next headline reads, Cunningham Township. Assessor faces scrutiny for hiring decisions. This article is written by Natalie Wickman and is based out of Urbana. A former Cunningham Township employee called for the resignation of new township assessor Wayne, that's W-A-Y-N-E, Williams, W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, who fired her and another employee and hired an ex-county official facing felony charges of official misconduct. That man, Joe, J-O-E, Meents, M-E-E-N-T-S, will be leaving his new position January 31st. Williams announced the termination last week, saying it was a response to concerns from Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin, Township Supervisor Danielle Chinoweth, the township board, and his constituents. Jamie Willard and Kim Hooper, longtime township employees, were fired on the same day Meintz was hired. Willard spoke to the township board Monday night during a packed meeting and said Meintz was hired because he is friends with Williams. "He has been proven to be untrustworthy," Willard said about Williams. "He's had contact with Miss Hooper and I, and he gave us reassurance that he would keep his current staff. He was asking what we thought of office hours and if there were any changes we wanted to make." Williams, a Democrat, was elected assessor after running unopposed last spring. He assumed office January 1st under provisions, state law. Meintz came under fire when he was working as Champaign County's supervisor of assessments and allegedly used a county credit card to make more than $1,000 in personal purchases. Once the purchases became known, Meintz repaid the county and resigned that position a year ago. Then, in October, a special prosecutor charged Meintz with 8 felony counts of official misconduct. His next scheduled court date is February 6th. When Williams hired Meintz, he said, "I believe that people deserve second chances when they've made mistakes. I've had the pleasure of working with Joe before." When asked why Meintz wouldn't be terminated until the end of the month, Williams said, "There's work to do," quote unquote. Willard said Williams has a record of subverting local services and businesses. She said he was offered the use of a local human resources representative for this situation, but went with someone from Belleville that was later found to be one of his Facebook friends, quote unquote. "Mr. Williams also decided to change our health insurance company from a local brokerage to one in Harvey," Williams said. "I don't think that was a random draw. I think that was a friend, too." In response to Willard's comments, Williams told the News Gazette, "I only have the best interests of Cunningham Township taxpayers in mind," quote unquote. Willard noted that the township board may not have the authority to request Williams' resignation, and Alderman Eric Jacobson agreed, saying it has, quote unquote, limited authority. "I do want to express my regret for how this played out," Jacobson said to Willard. "I thank you for your service." Tears welled up in Willard's eyes during her response. "I loved my job. I worked very hard for my job," Willard said while looking at Williams. "I was there for almost 10 years, and someone came in, and in 10 minutes it was gone." Claudia Lenhoff, L-E-N-N-H-O-F-F, Executive Director of Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, said this staffing shakeup shouldn't prompt city officials to dissolve Cunningham Township. "Our township provides very valuable services to citizens that would otherwise fall through the cracks," Lenhoff said. "A township serves a vital local purpose and isn't redundant." James Kilgore, K-I-L-G-O-R-E, co-director of the First Followers Reentry Program, agreed with Lenhoff, calling the township invaluable as a resource for First Followers. "It's absurd to think the city council can simply absorb the township," Kilgore said. "The search for Meintz's replacement will start as soon as possible," Williams said. "It will be an open application online," Williams told the News Gazette. "Anyone is open to apply." Hooper has said it's unlikely that she'll be reapplying for her old job, noting how Williams had Urbana police present while giving her and Willard their notices of termination. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. On Tuesdays, we'll introduce the kids behind High School Confidential. Today, Bemence, Sydney, that's S-Y-D-N-E-Y, Gadbury, G-A-D-B-U-R-Y, who is well on her way to becoming a dental hygienist. For the past year, the senior has worked as an assistant for Monticello's Dr. Bruce Winterstein. She's so determined to follow her mom's career path that she'll spend her spring break at work, and in the fall, she'll head to Parkland College to study dental hygiene. On Thursday, she'll get to show Bement High and how cozy it is when she takes over our Snapchat account. "You might be surprised how small some of the classes are," she said. "There are 3 of us in my math class." Follow along by searching for News Gazette on the app. "We have a lot of school pride," she said. "I can't wait to show that." Online audience, what was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday, saw 1,124,874 page views. The 3 top stories in the area online were 1, new Cunningham assessor fires 2 workers, hires ex-county official facing misconduct charges. 2, Zaz Italian Cafe closes both of its locations. 3, probe underway in death of woman found outside nursing home. The 3 top sports stories were 1, change coming for Illini after loss. 2, Boden, excuse me, I knew I was going to mispronounce that. It's E-B-O-I-G, B-O-D-I-N, Eboigboden, shines in breakout performance. 3, Tate and Illini continue to take on water. The 3 top videos were 1, a friendly game of pond hockey in Mahomet, 2, Underwood, we made mistakes that you can't make, and 3, game of the week, Central at Centennial's boys basketball. The 3 top photo galleries were 1, signing day, locals heading to college, 2, high school boys basketball, Central versus Centennial, and 3, Prairie Fruits Farm. And in history, area history, in 1918, the Saturday school plan should not be considered lightly, Champaign School Superintendent Ernest said of the idea in use in many schools. He said he doubted whether such a plan would help the nation in wartime. He noted that a 6-day-a-week schedule would shorten the school year and allow county boys to get into the fields earlier and help in food production. But city boys were generally employed on Saturdays, and girls had special lessons or helped their mothers. In 1968, formal charges of misconduct were to be filed against Champaign Police Patrolman Ronald Sexton, City Manager Warren Browning said. Police Chief Harvey Shirley had asked that Sexton be fired from the police force. No details of the charges facing Sexton had been released. The next headline reads, Champaign County Nursing Home, for debt-laden facility, a rare profit. November was last year's first month in black, panel told. This article is written by Tom Kachik, and it's based out of Urbana. November was the first month last year that the Champaign County Nursing Home reported net income. Members of the county's Nursing Home Advisory Board, were told, Monday night. The county-owned home showed a profit of $30,000 in November, an improvement from a $66,574 loss it incurred in October. Prior monthly losses were in six figures. And the home's average daily census inched up to about 138, although it had fallen back slightly to 136 on Monday. The nursing home has 243 beds. Everything is moving in the right direction, said Suzanne Koenig, that's K-O-E-N-I-G, the president of SAC Management Services, that's S-A-K Management Services, the Northfield-based firm that has been paid about $48,000 a month to manage the home. Things are becoming operationally viable, added nursing home board member Kathy Emanuel. But the nursing home still has tremendous debts, including more than $2.4 million it owes to various county funds, according to a December 12th report by the county auditor. The facility also owed $2.7 million to outside vendors, the auditor said. The county board is expected to vote tonight on a package of nursing home-related items, including whether to advertise for requests from private companies to purchase the home on the east side of Urbana. The package also includes a plan to issue tax anticipation warrants to help the facility's finances. At one point last year, former city administrator Rick Snyder, S-N-I-D-E-R, said it was possible that the county could get as much as $11 million for the nursing home from a private company. Also Monday night, nursing home board members said that at least 9 local artists would display their works at an art fair and open house at the facility on February 25th. And board members agreed to move the starting time of future nursing home board meetings to 6:30 p.m. to accommodate nursing home residents and family members who sometimes have to forego their dinner to make the 6 p.m. meetings. David Laker, L-A-K-E-R, who frequently attends the monthly meetings and speaks on behalf of his wife, a longtime resident, said the time change would be helpful because sometimes dinner isn't served until 5:40 p.m. Laker also asked board members to look into the quality of the food being served at the home. You're paying for a quality product, but you're not getting it, reported Laker, saying that he had discovered that food items at the home came from China, Indonesia, Mexico, and Poland. The next headline reads, New Arrival, Giraffe Born at Peoria Zoo. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Peoria. A female baby giraffe was born at the Peoria Zoo, weighing 122 pounds and measuring 5 feet and 10 inches tall. The Peoria Journal Star reports that giraffe Vivian gave birth at 2:38 a.m. Sunday. Zoo director Yvonne Strode says mom and baby are doing well, but need time to heal and grow before being ready for visitors within 2 to 4 weeks. The zoo plans on sharing pictures and a live video feed online of the mother and baby. Giraffes have a long gestational period, and Strode says Vivian and her daughters was about 465 days. The next headline reads, Federal Court, Ailing alleged mobster freed. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. A purported suburban Chicago mobster has been released from jail, where he has been awaiting trial on gun charges because he's terminally ill with prostate cancer. The Chicago Sun-Times reports that a federal judge ordered Charles Russell's release last month, saying he had been held in home detention. A defense lawyer told the court that the cancer had spread throughout Russell's body. Russell, 68, whose nickname is Chucky, was arrested around Christmas in 2016 and accused of illegally receiving guns in a robbery scheme. The federal criminal complaint says Russell bragged about threatening people with a blowtorch. The next headline reads, Chicago suburbs, libraries reaching out to homeless, staff trained to treat displaced with dignity. This article is again written by the Associated Press and is based out of Aurora. Libraries in the Chicago suburbs are making efforts to ensure homeless people feel welcome and are treated with dignity. Ryan, R-Y-A-N, Dowd, D-O-W-D, the executive director of HESED, H-E-S-E-D, House, a homeless shelter in Aurora, has been training staff at libraries there, in Naperville, and across the country on how to work with homeless patrons, the Chicago Tribune reported. His training focuses on using empathy to address issues such as body odor, those who carry too many bags or sleep in the library, and on how to interact with people who are delusional. Dowd said the training is designed to help library officials enforce rules, but with respect. My hope is really that homeless individuals are treated better and that there will be fewer problems for organizations working with homeless individuals, he said. Dowd built the in-person program after a YouTube video he made of the training gained popularity. He's also planning to release a book this month on the topic of homelessness and libraries. He's sort of famous in library land, said Michaela, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-A, Haberkern, H-A-B-E-R-K-E-R-N, Deputy Director of the Aurora Public Library. Library staff can easily drift into a hard stance about the rules, but Dowd's training puts employees in a different mindset, Haberkern said. It did make me think more about the experience of being homeless, she said. What it would be like to be walking around all day, to be cold all the time, to be outside all the time, things like that. She said the library had fewer issues almost immediately after the training. The Naperville Public Library sometimes gets pushback from residents who question whether homeless patrons should be allowed in the library if they're likely not paying taxes, said David Della Terza, deputy director of the institution. He said staff members take the approach that libraries should be welcoming to all. Part of our duty as a library, to me, is to just be a place that's open for everyone, Della Terza said. The next headline reads, Village of Rankin. Service truck comes in at lower cost. This article is based out of Rankin and is written by Sandy Coffey, C-O-F-F-E-Y, for the Ford County Record. Village President Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, Warren, W-A-R-R-E-N, has purchased a bucket truck from the city of Paxton on Rankin's behalf. Warren said it cost $3,000, half of what he'd been authorized to spend by Rankin's village board. Warren said the 29-year-old truck is in very good condition and needs no immediate repairs. It has 40,000 miles, has all of its cables and hoses, looks new, and does not leak oil or fluids, Warren said. And Department of Public Health, flu season appears to be peaking early in Illinois. State records show that the flu season in Illinois appears to be peaking early this year. There are more than 100 more influenza outbreaks across the state this season compared with last season at this time, the Chicago Tribune reported. And the Illinois Department of Public Health said the most common flu strain this season is associated with more severe symptoms. Last year, we saw the peak in February, State Health Department spokeswoman Melanie Arnold said. It might just be starting earlier. And that article was written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, January 9th, 2018. We'll resume shortly with the rest of the News Gazette for the day, part two, so stay tuned. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have a wonderful day.